Pop Health Podcast is a public service of 24-Hour Home Care.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pop Health Podcast. This is your host, Zach Morgan. I have a very distinguished guest with me here today, Insurance Commissioner for California, Mr. Dave Jones. Thank you so much for coming in to meet me. We are in Southern California, his partial home a couple of days a week when he's not up in Sacramento. Thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
It's great to be with you and your listeners.
Yeah, you know, I had the pleasure to hear the commissioner speak at the State of Reform Conference not too long ago. It was pre-election. Things were up in the air, I think, much as they are now, just post-election, too. But I was really inspired with a lot of the things that the commissioner had to say, different ideas that he had, kind of regardless of the outcome of things and how his office is working to help Californians get both the coverage they need and the protections that they need from his office. So I am really glad to have you. I'm not going to waste a whole lot of time. One thing we do like to do to let people learn a little bit about our guests is what is something that people might not know about you, even outside of your professional life?
I like to camp, hike, and cross-country ski.
Oh, excellent.
We're blessed with some extraordinary scenic sites here in California, and I love to go out and spend time in the outdoors, particularly in the wintertime, cross-country skiing with my family.
Excellent. Up in the Northern California areas around Mammoth, or where do you typically like to go and hike?
We like to go skiing south of Lake Tahoe.
Excellent.
Anywhere in the Tahoe area and the Sierra Nevadas. We enjoy cross-country skiing, and so it's just nice to get away from the crowds and into the woods, and it's very, very peaceful and beautiful.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I know that you started your career in law. How did you get involved in public service?
Well, I suppose my first exposure to public service was through my dad. My dad ran for a local school board, not because he was interested in running for higher office, but because he figured he had kids in the public schools, and his way of making a contribution was to be on the school board. And so I went door-to-door with him and his campaign for school board, and I think that was my first direct exposure to the possibility of public service.
Yeah, and if I, in my research, did it correctly, you started out on the city council in Sacramento? Was that kind of your first experience there, and then worked kind of your way up through public service, correct?
Yes, in terms of elected office, but I began my legal career as a legal aid lawyer.
Okay.
Legal aid's a program of free legal assistance for the poor, so I provided free legal assistance to poor families in Northern California. And then I had a chance to work for 3 years for Janet Reno when she was the United States Attorney General. I worked as her special assistant and then counsel. And then after that, served on the City Council in Sacramento, served in the State Assembly representing Sacramento, and then in 2010 was elected insurance commissioner.
Oh, excellent. And so, again, this is kind of a healthcare, population health-related podcast, and so that's where a lot of our listenership comes from. I know that you have had a fair amount of experience working in the healthcare sector. Some people might not know all the details of what your role is now, though. Can you give us a little bit of an idea of what it is that you're tasked to do?
Certainly. The insurance commissioner leads the California Department of Insurance. We do a number of things in the health insurance space. First, we help to regulate the health insurance market, not the rates, but all of the other rules that apply to the health insurance market, making sure the policies meet the requirements for essential health benefits, and making sure that the deductibles and co-payments comply with law, making sure that the health insurers follow through on the promises they make to consumers. So we have a consumer hotline that receives 170,000 calls a year, some of which are health insurance-related calls. We go to bat for consumers and businesses in their disputes with insurance companies. We also oversee the financial condition of health insurers and insurers generally to make sure they have enough resources to pay claims. We investigate fraud against health insurers. I have 300 law enforcement professionals that work for me that investigate various forms of fraud. And so we do a variety of things in this space. We also work very closely with the Brown administration and other agencies to implement the Affordable Care Act. That's been a big part of our focus these last 6 years.
Right. I was actually surprised in my research to find the extent to which you work both for the consumers. I believe I read something about you had saved about $343 million for consumers in reviewing health insurance rates. But also on the provider side, I believe you had some hand in lowering malpractice rates and things for healthcare providers. I hadn't realized that it was so much on kind of both sides of the coin there. What motivated you to get into the insurance commissioner role?
So my privilege has been to be in a variety of different public service roles. And when I was serving in the state assembly, I had a chance to chair the assembly health committee and also chair the budget subcommittee on health. And there I had a chance to see firsthand issues and challenges associated with our health care delivery system in California. Around that time also, there was the election of the new president and the enactment of the Affordable Care Act. And so I thought that I might be able to make a contribution in the role of insurance commissioner in implementing health care reform in California, among other consumer-oriented laws that we have in California around insurance. So that's what appealed to me and why I ran.
And you're in your second term, correct?
That's right.
Excellent. So, and obviously you're doing a great job. So we know being in California, we know that there are a lot of unique opportunities and challenges in California. You know, the economy would be one of the largest in the world if it was independent, but also it's the largest insurance market in the country. I believe around $260 billion in annual premiums. What unique challenges does that create?
It's actually an opportunity. Our size means that most every insurance company of any repute and of any size is in this market because our market's so big. So that's a benefit because it means more choice, more competition across all insurance lines, including health insurance. Having said that, though, our size also poses challenges for us as a regulatory agency because we have some 40 million Californians who interact in some way, shape, or form with the healthcare system, not all of whom have health insurance, but many do. Right. And so it places demands on us as a consumer protection agency to go to bat for them when they have disputes with insurance companies. So the size is a plus, but also a challenge.
Sure, I can imagine. Well, one of those things that you're tasked with and one of the challenges that comes up is battling insurance fraud. Can you share with us what kind of examples that might look like and also some successes that you've had?
Sadly, we see fraud in a variety of different ways. We see medical providers, physicians, chiropractors, others who defraud health insurers by upcoding treatment that they're providing or right. sometimes seeking reimbursements for treatment that they're not even providing. We see sometimes other vendors in this space, interpreters, others that are providing services, make false claims to insurance companies. So it takes a variety of different forms, and our job is to investigate fraud against commercial insurance companies, against private insurance companies. So we have investigators that do that work. Sometimes we also see individuals who are not properly licensed to sell insurance. In order to sell insurance, you have to have an agent's or broker's license, and we have some 360,000 people that we license to do that. We fingerprint them, background check them, make them take a test, make sure that they have the requisite character and integrity to perform that role. But sometimes people will sell insurance even though they don't have a license, or they'll sell a bogus insurance sure. product to people too. And so we investigate those crimes as well. We provide about $60 million a year to district attorneys to prosecute the crimes we investigate. Wow. So we want to make sure that after we've done our investigations, if there's a crime, that individuals be held accountable.
Absolutely. Well, you and I know you mentioned that you have a whole team of people, investigators who are out looking for those kinds of things. Are there resources for people who are on the front line or consumers to protect themselves against some of those fraudulent cases?
Well, one thing we always encourage people to do is to be very careful and use their common sense and good judgment. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. If someone's trying to pressure sell you into buying some sort of an insurance product and tells you that you've got to sign by a time certain, you might want to take a moment to reflect. Particularly, we find seniors are very vulnerable. People will befriend them and try to sell them a bogus home care product potentially that doesn't really provide benefits. And so you want to be very careful about signing anything, buying anything until you've had a chance to review it, and then talk to a trusted friend or relative. So we have a hotline, 1-800-927-4357. If people think that they've been a victim of an insurance fraud, they can call us and we'll take a look at what has occurred and see if it's something that we can investigate.
What was that number again? 800-927-4357.
4357.
Great. All right. Well, and actually I had seen one thing you had touched on was senior protection. I am in the senior care industry, and so I know that you have done some work in the past on even like conservatorship and things like that. So it's also nice to see that there are individual protections for the aging population as well. I do want to talk to you a little bit about kind of the future of the Affordable Care Act. I know that you mentioned that you have had a hand in helping to roll out or regulate some of those things within California. Before we dive into that, though, what is Covered California, and why did California decide to create its own exchange rather than going with one of the federal exchanges?
Covered California is a online marketplace where Californians can go to buy subsidized health insurance. It's something that was established as a part of California's implementation of the Affordable Care Act, and California decided to create its own exchange called Covered California because we wanted to have the ability to have some control over how it operates, and we evaluated our ability to operate it and concluded we could operate it successfully, and so decided we didn't need to join a federal exchange and instead decided to create our own exchange. It gave us a little bit more flexibility. Also, we're very knowledgeable about our market here. We've had a lot of experience with it, so we could bring that experience to bear as opposed to being part of a larger federal exchange, which might be across several markets where the feds are in charge and you don't have as much local control.
Right. And, you know, kind of regardless of what the future looks like, early on it was successful, right? As far as people signing up, I mean, there was a lot of buy-in to the exchange, right?
It has been and continues to be successful. In fact, we just ended open enrollment for our exchange. The numbers look very positive. Somewhere in the order of 1.3 or 1.4 million Californians have signed up again or purchased health insurance for the first time. The beauty of it is that 90% of those people are getting a subsidy in the form of a reduced premium. And that's a huge benefit for them in terms of reducing their cost of health insurance. The other benefit of the Affordable Care Act is that the plans are standardized, so you can do apples to apples comparisons across health insurers in a way that you couldn't previously. You get free preventative care. That's a benefit. Some of your cost sharing, depending upon your income eligibility and the kind of plan you buy, is also covered. So there are a tremendous number of benefits associated with it. We've been very pleased with its results so far.
Excellent. And just for people who might not know, the subsidies on the premiums, do those come from the state itself or are those federal subsidies?
The subsidies are from the federal government, and technically they're in the form of a tax credit, but in essence it comes right off the top of the premium. And I misspoke a moment ago. December 19th was the deadline for January 1st coverage, but in fact open enrollment for 2017 lasts through January 31st. So there's still time. If you missed that December 19th deadline for your coverage to turn on January 1st, you can still sign up till January 31st for coverage.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. With the exchanges in general, not just Covered California, but across the nation, rising costs of premiums have been getting a lot of media coverage. I think that that's probably disproportionately a lot of what we hear about nowadays. First of all, can you explain to people who might not understand, why do the costs of premiums go up in exchanges? Is it not, that they're not getting enough healthy people? And also, how does California's exchange, California's premiums, are they fair to consumers? How does the California premium market look?
So premiums go up for a number of reasons. One is underlying medical costs continue to rise. So the expense of services provided by medical providers, the expense of pharmaceutical products, mm-hmm. the expense of hospitals, that continues to rise. Insurance companies have to cover those costs, plus their administrative costs, plus some profit. So all of those contribute to rising costs, particularly more acute illnesses or chronic illnesses for which we have made advancements in science and treatment and pharmaceutical products. Well, those things cost money. And as a consequence, our overall healthcare costs and premium costs go up. The prices went up before the Affordable Care Act, and they have continued to rise after the Affordable Care Act. I think it's important to remember that it was about 2008 or so when Anthem Blue Cross announced a 36% increase. Now, this is years before the full implementation of the Affordable Care Act. In fact, even before its enactment. So costs were going up double digit before the Affordable Care Act. They continue to go up after the Affordable Care Act. I think the rate of increase overall, at least initially, was slowed, which was a positive thing.
Right.
But again, we start seeing those underlying costs go up, and they have an impact on premiums. Now, the other challenge is that the hope was that we would get everybody into the risk pool, and that includes healthy people, too. And that's why there was a mandate that people buy health insurance.
Right.
If you're going to require the health insurers to write health insurance, regardless of people's prior health conditions, then you've got to make sure that you spread that risk across as large a pool as possible. And that means you need to get healthy people into the pool, which is why the Affordable Care Act had the requirement that people
right.
get health insurance and why businesses were required to provide health insurance too. Well, as it turns out, the penalty for individuals associated with not getting health insurance may not have been high enough, as controversial as that sounds,
right.
To make sure that everybody got into the market. And so while a number of healthy people got into the market, perhaps not as many got in as would be desirable. And as a consequence, then you're not spreading the cost of the sicker people over a large enough pool. And so that has an impact on rates too. All in all, though, given the enormity of the challenge that we faced prior to the Affordable Care Act, where we had such a large percentage of the nation's population without health insurance and as a consequence without health care. And here in California, such a large number of people without health insurance and as a consequence not having access to health care. We've reduced by over half the percentage of uninsured nationally and in California. Is the Affordable Care Act perfect? No. Are there things that could be done to make it better? It was a political compromise. So
right.
certainly it's not perfect. But in terms of getting coverage for people, it's done a very good job, which is why I'm very concerned about the calls for its repeal.
Right. And it's frustrating, too, for people to see that with the even the penalty, you know, not swaying people to get health care, as someone who's in health care and knowing what the realistic cost of procedures are, and if there is, you know, some sort of accident or something like that, it's far less than what insurance would cost you on a regular basis. So that can be incredibly frustrating, I'm sure. In your time in the state assembly before you were insurance commissioner, you, if I'm correct, you chaired the Assembly Health Committee and the Budget Subcommittee on Health and Human Services. So why did you believe in the Affordable Care Act, and what do you think its future might look like in California?
So if you cast your memory back to what things were like before the Affordable Care Act, you'll remember that, again, we had very high percentage of our population without health insurance. We had, for those that had health insurance, rising rates. the health insurers were able to deny you health insurance due to any pre-existing condition you might have. So some minor illness in your history, and they could say, no, we're not going to give you health insurance. And then you were out of luck. Those that had health insurance ran the risk of being thrown off of health insurance through what was called medical rescissions, where they would go back and look at your health insurance application, and maybe you inadvertently failed to check some box or fill out some question, and they'd say, hey, you didn't give us complete information. We're throwing you off. Of course, this would be right when you needed the health insurance most and you were making a claim. Then you had what were called lifetime and annual caps. So if you were one of the lucky ones to get health insurance and they hadn't thrown you off and the price hadn't tossed you out and you actually were getting the health insurance, at a certain point, you'd run into a cap on the amount the health insurance would cover because they were trying to prevent payouts beyond a certain amount. So you could have some very acute illness, say cancer, and you're getting some course of treatment, say chemotherapy, and suddenly the health insurance would cut off because you'd hit that lifetime or that annual cap. So all of these things and many more were positively addressed by the Affordable Care Act. Yeah. And that's why I supported it. I supported it because I believed and still believe that it made a difference in the lives of many Californians. There are people I've met as I make my way about the state who have told me firsthand, or their physician has told me, hey, but for the Affordable Care Act, I wouldn't be alive today. I wouldn't have gotten the life-saving treatment I need. Now, did rates go up for some people? Certainly. I mean, the people that had health insurance before, that were upper middle class folks and that were enjoying lower rates because they were only selling health insurance to people that were healthy, they saw rate increases. And perhaps some of them, maybe many of them, were not eligible for the subsidy. But there are ways to address that. You could expand the subsidy to those individuals. You could get more people into the pool to try to impact the rates, a variety of different things. Now, though, the conversation has shifted, and the argument is it ought to be repealed in its entirety. I think that's a big mistake. I think we'll lose all of the beneficial things that we have put in place to date. The other problem with repeal is that for its success, it does rely on a significant federal partnership. There are substantial federal dollars that are flowing to Californians, roughly $20 billion a year, not to the state, but to Californians and California families to defray the cost of their health insurance, either by virtue of their being on Medi-Cal and taking advantage of the expansion of Medi-Cal, or they're buying health insurance in the exchange and getting a premium subsidy. The proposals to repeal would eliminate all of that assistance. The state doesn't have the dollars to backfill that. So net-net, we're looking at nationally the potential that 20 million Americans will lose their health insurance under this repeal proposal. Now, if you look carefully at the replace ideas, these are not ideas that will actually result in these 20 million Americans being able to get affordable health insurance. Some of these ideas we've had for some time, and they haven't worked. High-risk pools is one idea. The notion that we take all the sick people, put them in a single pool, come up with a rate for them. Well, that's going to be a very expensive rate because it's all the sick people.
Right.
And then the idea is the state will subsidize that. Well, where does the state get the money to subsidize that? Health savings account. Well, they're wonderful for middle class or upper middle class people. But if you're a working person and hardly making ends meet, you're not going to have disposable income to put into a health savings account.
Right.
So these ideas that are being proposed, block granting Medicare, well, that's great for the federal government because it cuts the amount that they're providing to families in California, but it's disaster for California because it reduces the amount of funding available for their care and also impacts physicians and hospitals and other medical providers because then they won't be reimbursed for care they're providing.
Now, actually, you touched on something that, and I know that you are tasked with the private insurance, but you touched on the block grant. Would you mind just really briefly explaining what that means? Because that's been getting a lot more play lately. I've been hearing it more and more. I think it's been in the press more. Can you just briefly explain what that means?
Absolutely. So under the Medicaid program, it's a federal-state partnership, and the federal government provides a certain percentage of the cost for each individual in the program, roughly on average about 57%. It varies across states. California actually gets one of the lower reimbursement levels, closer to 50% of the cost gets picked up by the feds, 50% by the state. Well, under the Affordable Care Act, there was an additional opportunity to expand eligibility for Medicaid, or what we call Medi-Cal, to single adults. Previously, Medicaid or Medi-Cal was open only to families with children, seniors, disabled people. But as we know here in Southern California, we just look around in our communities, there are a lot of single adults who are working people,
right,
don't make enough money to get health insurance, really could use the assistance. And so the Affordable Care Act said to California and other states, you can expand to cover these people too, which we did. The nice thing about that was the federal government would pick up 100% of the cost. So, block grant. The idea is to cap the amount that goes to a state to cover its costs for Medicaid. And the way it's being proposed is that it would actually reduce over time the amount available. So instead of being promised that for every person that is eligible for Medicaid or Medi-Cal, the feds would pick up 51, 52, 53%.
Right.
The block grant establishes a fixed amount, either in total or per person. And if the costs go up above that, then the state has to eat those costs. And the problem is, we know those costs are rising.
Right.
And where it's being proposed to set that overall block grant or per person block grant is below what our actual costs are. So
yeah,
the concern that states have is that this whole block grant idea, which is being portrayed as additional flexibility and more ability of the state to do things, actually is a wolf in sheep's clothing. That what it really is a cut in the amount of money in the tens of billions of dollars that are available to states like California to provide health care. And
right,
so that's why I think personally it's a bad idea.
Yeah. Especially, like you said, in a place like California, where it has such a unique market and a unique set of opportunities, as you said, but also the challenges. I know that we're running short on time. There were a few things specifically from kind of your office and the things you've been working on that I wanted to make sure that we touched on. Regardless of how the ACA shakes out, you still have been doing a ton to try to help consumers get what they need and empower them in their own healthcare. One such program I think that you're working on is called Healthcare Compare. Is that right?
That's correct.
You're working with Consumer Reports for that website. Can you tell us about it and kind of what your vision was for Healthcare Compare?
So Healthcare Compare is a online tool that gives people in California some information about the cost of the 100 most common medical procedures. So right now it's very difficult as a consumer to know what a medical procedure costs. And so it's then very difficult to decide where to get that medical procedure. And as we are faced increasingly with high deductible plans where we have to dig into our own pocket to cover some portion of our lab tests or treatment or care, it matters where you go to get that care, and the cost of that care matters because you're paying for it directly.
Right.
So healthcarecompare.gov, you can go to that website, gives you information with regard to the average, the max, and the minimum cost within your region for 100 most common medical procedures. Ideally, what we'd like to do is provide real-time information about the actual cost of each procedure, each treatment, each pharmaceutical product from any given medical provider. The problem with getting that information is that the medical providers and the health insurers and the HMOs don't want to share it.
Sure.
So we've taken the information that we have available and provided something very useful to consumers so that at least they have some reference data as to what something should cost so they can do a better job of shopping. And then we've coupled it with quality information too. So you've got really robust information about the quality of various medical providers, whether it's hospitals or particular physicians groups, and also some information about what you should look for when you're getting this particular treatment. What are the questions you should ask a physician?
Okay.
How should you go about approaching getting information you need to make the best decisions for yourself? So I encourage people to go to healthcarecompare.gov, and we're excited about it. but our hope is to build on it.
Absolutely. Does it break it down geographically? I know one thing is with value-based purchasing, you know, one procedure in, you know, Sacramento can cost three times as much in San Francisco. Does it break it down by geography as well?
It does. I mean, it is broken out by geographical areas, so the information you're getting is specific to your market.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we are all out of time. Thank you for sitting down with me. One thing you touched on at the conference, just as we're wrapping up here, there have been in the news lately some really high-profile merger attempts, Humana, Aetna, the different insurances. We've been talking about the insurance exchange here. How does that really high-level view, since we're pretty much out of time, but how would those kind of mergers or those mergers not happening affect consumers on the exchanges?
So one of the big challenges we face, not only in California but nationwide, is the growing consolidation of the health insurance market as well as the medical provider market. So in health insurance, Anthem proposes to buy Cigna. So the second largest and fourth largest insurers are proposing to merge. And then Aetna is proposing to buy Humana, the third and fifth largest insurers proposing to merge. And these deals are valued at $70 or $80 billion each. Now, the proponents of these deals, the company executives, argue that there'll be savings. In the case of the Anthem-Cigna merger, they're saying $2 billion in savings. In the case of the Aetna-Humana merger, about $1 billion in savings. I held a public hearing on both mergers, invited the executives of the companies to spend some time with me and the public answering questions. They were unable to document the savings. But even assuming the savings are real, which they were not able to document, I asked them the following question. This is the executives. Well, if there is $2 billion in savings or $1 billion in savings, depending upon which merger we're talking about, you'll be passing that on in the form of lower rates to consumers, right? Well, there was silence just like that. And point of fact, no executive of any of those four companies was willing to commit to passing on those savings to consumers or businesses in California or anywhere else for that matter. So my conclusion after a lot of thought and study was that these mergers are bad for California, bad for California consumers, for California businesses, and for California's health insurance market. And it stands to reason. You're talking about monopolization, basically. Less choice, less competition. And every study that's been done of health insurance mergers in the last 10 years, independent study, has concluded that these mergers result in higher prices, decreased choice, and lower quality care. So I reached these conclusions after a lot of thought and review of the evidence, put together very detailed findings of fact and conclusions of law, and then wrote to the United States Attorney General and urged her to file suit to block these two mergers. And she did exactly that.
Yeah.
And so the trial in the Anthem-Cigna case just concluded recently, the first phase. The Humana trial, I think, is still ongoing. I'm very pleased that the United States Department of Justice listened to our concerns here in California and my concerns as insurance commissioner, reflecting the concerns of California consumers, and has sued to block those mergers. I don't think they're good for us.
Absolutely. And as consumers, we appreciate that you're looking out for everybody very much. Commissioner Jones, thank you so much for sitting down with me. This was a very refreshing conversation. We don't always get as much insight as we did today. So thank you very much. For all of our listeners, thank you for listening to Pop Health Podcast. You can find us online at pophealthpodcast.com or on iTunes in the podcast section. You can also find me on Twitter at Pop Health Zach. Thank you very much for listening.